We're going to study today what happened, or maybe the next couple of days. We've talked a great deal about what happened at when Christ died at his crucifixion. The sun set, the beginning of the last day. The night had come now, no man could work. It was really the destruction of not only Egypt, but it was the destruction of the world, of Babylon included. So after the cross, after the crucifixion, the only two things that were left on the face of the earth from God's perspective were the vessels of wrath and the vessels of mercy. The vessels of wrath are those that continue in self-realization, concerned with self. Living by cause and effect, living by reward and punishment. The vessels of mercy are those in total dependence on the Father. It doesn't matter what you call yourself outwardly. You can do anything you want outwardly, but it's what goes on inwardly when in your private time, in your thoughts, that's important. That's why each of us must present ourselves a living sacrifice, that we may be transfigured by the renewing of our mind, that we might prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We might test it. The only good and acceptable and perfect will of God is Jesus Christ. So he said of his disciples, "You are they that have continued with me in my temptation, in my test." The moment you think that something is going on with you, then you've fallen back into the kingdom of darkness. But the question is, what happened? What was going on in the temple, with the religious service in the temple at the time that we know what was going on in the temple when he was crucified? The veil rent from top to bottom, showing that it was a sham, that there was no... The Holy of Holies was empty. The Ark of the Covenant wasn't in there. But they continued on this next part of the process, which was the preparing of the first fruits. So, what does that mean? And those of you who've been here for a while know what it means, but you've probably forgotten. The Feast of First Fruits came on the morrow after the Sabbath. It was in the middle of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This bread, which had been the bread of affliction for the world, has now become the bread of the new state of existence. No leaven of either Babylon or Egypt can pervade it. They were to be a new lump, as he is unleavened. This is a great sentence. As death has been abolished by death, as captivity has been led captive, as the cross has become our tree of life, as servitude has now become our freedom, so the bread of affliction has become the bread, our bread, of the new life and joy and freedom. So that we refuse to take sustenance or satisfaction from any bread or food that is leavened. Now, if you really think about it, leavened means subject to time. Here we go again.
Yeah, that's because the leavening process is like a process. It puffs itself up in that.
So by definition, any thought process or anything else that you are gaining identity, satisfaction, sustenance from that is time dependent is leavened. So if you're thinking about something in the future and how wonderful that would be, You're eating unleavened. You're eating leaven. That's why throughout the scriptures, now is the only accepted time, and that now doesn't mean the date that you accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, because that's so big of you. Now means the eternal now. It never stops being now. That's why you give no thought, because by definition, you must use the leavened agent, the thing that's producing the leaven, to give thought. Oh, but I'm thinking about Jesus. Or I'm just looking ahead. I'm reading ahead. No. It's called leaven. Everybody understand that a little bit? What? Are you okay? Something happened. All right. No thought came, no question. All right.
I'll give you something.
You're just a little bit off.
And now we're going to hear from Clyde.
Self cannot be realized outside of time. That's what I just
Self said. Is by definition dead outside of time. So by definition, that's why when Christ died on the cross, all men died. That's the first predicate of saying what it.
But what you said about leaven, it requires time. I mean, time and self, realization that it's all. That's what it is. It's, you know, as self is being realized, it's done in time. And that's why it's done.
And it's just a hot air balloon. It's cotton candy, because there's nothing real. It doesn't. It denigrates with time. It evaporates, or is subject to being vaporized. Or, yeah. I just want to think about it. You just want to use that leaven machine. And again, I want you to think about it. I want you to prove it. I want you to test it. I want you to do every possible thing. You can't cast down imaginations until you find out the imaginations that you're trying to do will all lead you to the same place all the rest of your imaginations have done. So I'm not asking you not to think. I'm telling you to think fully. All right, so...
We live in the now, and Christ said it is finished. One day, one time, from the time Christ died on the cross. So, what does over mean? I mean, does that mean that everything that's happened is happening in the same day? Or does that mean that what has happened is over and not important to us anymore?
You can't ask that question without time.
Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Am I clear here?
Of course. But the question is unanswerable unless you return to time.
How concerned should I be with what happened yesterday?
Meaningless.
Not totally meaningless. What might happen tomorrow?
It's not our business. That's the Holy Spirit's business. What happened in the past is covered by the blood. What happened in the future is covered. What's going to happen, if there is a future...
Things that happen in our lives, which are over, we still... How important are they?
They were used of God to bring you to the point where you can now see and hear.
So really, they are...
All used of God.
I beg your pardon?
Everything that has happened is used of God.
Used of God.
He has wrought all our works in us.
Sometimes we cling to things which have happened previously.
That's why Isaiah says we sin as it were with a cart rope.
That is sin, right?
Right. We're dragging the past, by definition, we're dragging the garbage from Egypt with us, trying to take it into the promised land. Are the cling and hope of the future. Both of them are leaven.
Or going to another place.
Yeah, well, that's why you've heard me say 1,000 times, about you know, well, I'm the way I am because of what happened to me when I was a kid, or what happened to me when I was this way. Or, well,
we can't drag those things with us and justify it by saying it's the same day, right?
They're if I take it with me, then it isn't the same day because I'm back where I'm taking it with me from.
That's like a Babylonian trick or something.
Well, it's exactly the same as saving your boundaries in plastic bags and writing down the date and filing them.
Yeah, but who does that?
There are people who do that.
Remember, the Lamb was slain from before the foundation of the world. You were chosen in Him from before the foundation of the world. I mean, so therefore nothing can have happened in the past all the way back to your genetic history that wasn't exactly as it should. That's why I keep telling you, you're at the top of the pyramid. You're the reason that all your ancestors lived, believe it or not. You couldn't be in and fit unless everything had happened exactly as it did. But now it's time to shed the grave clothes. Not nursing your inner child, kill a little son of a bitch. He's not alive anyway, is it just in your imagination?
Should we kill and torture it, or just kill it?
Just see, it's already dead. You don't have to torture it.
Okay. Buy the kill and torture.
See, if you torture it and you keep what you're really doing when you're
keep
torturing it, but what you're doing is you keep sabotaging yourself.
Yeah.
Some of you know a lot about that.
And keep visiting past mistakes. New ones.
Instead of reveling in the new ones, right?
But who would do that?
From the Nag Hammadi Library, which is a source of great Gnosticism, but it's got an interesting quote. This is Christ, the resurrected Christ, speaking, supposedly. He said, "I did not succumb to them as they had planned, and I did not die except in appearance, lest I be put to shame by them. For my death, which they think happened to them in their error and blindness, since they nailed their man unto their death. It was another, their father, who drank the gall and the vinegar. It was another upon whom they placed the crown of thorns, and I laughed at their ignorance." Now, obviously, that's not doctrine, but this was one of the many Gnostic sects that... It's just like this Gospel of Judas crap. Everybody had to find a way to make them be special. Right? So, the desert fathers, they thought that we're going to be special because we'll go out and live in a cave. And if I'd have been there, I'd have done the same damn thing. I'd have gone out and lived in a cave.
You kind of do.
Huh?
You
kind of
do.
Before I was rudely interrupted. But it gives you an understanding of what some of the very early church, just like yesterday we were reading from this about Cerinthus, and saw what they did. There, the Cerinthian heresy was that Christ was going to return and set up his visible kingdom on earth for 1,000 years. Well, isn't that what most evangelicals believe today? Well, back in the first centuries, it was considered a major heresy. It was right up there with gain is godliness, because they saw that at this offering, this perfect offering of Christ, that time ended for them. Anybody that wanted to keep time alive had to play games. That's why there is no private interpretation of Scripture. There's no. You can't have more than one interpretation, and the definition of Scripture is it is all Jesus Christ. So, at the same time Christ was being taken from the cross to his tomb, another procession took place very, very near. A noisy throng followed the delegates from the Sanhedrin outside the city and across the brook Kedron. They emerged into a field across Kedron, which had been marked and set aside for this purpose many days before. The law said, you shall bring a sheaf, an omer, of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. He shall wave the omer before God to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now, this Passover sheaf was to be accompanied by a burnt offering of a he lamb without blemish of the first year. Until this was done, no fresh, nothing new in the of the harvest could be eaten. I mean, this is biggie. It was reaped in public the day before it was offered. The crowd gathered around, and all this is happening now while Christ is in the grave. He's just about to go into the grave, excuse me. The omer was reaped in public the day before it was offered. The crowd gathered around the elders, who took care that it was done according to tradition. The spot where the first sheaf was to be reaped was marked by the Sanhedrin on the same day that the Passover lamb was killed. And the stalks were tied together while they were still standing. It was marked that by the highest of the high priest that this had met the standard of what the first fruit offering could be. Now again, this is you got to see that what was happening to Christ in relation to this. The barley had to be grown in an ordinary field. It had to be in the land of Israel. It could not have been in a garden or an orchard. The soil could not have been manured, nor could it have been artificially watered. The field was to be plowed 70 days before Passover in the autumn. It wasn't 70 days. It was more than that. Anyway, just as the field was to be plowed in the autumn and sowed exactly 70 days before Passover. Just as the sun went down, just as Christ is coming off, they're carrying him now, they had to take him off the cross before sunset, because otherwise they couldn't have done this. The man on the cross would have defiled the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Just as the sun went down, three men, each with a sickle and a basket, set to work. They're carrying Jesus' body off the cross, or getting it off the cross. While that's being done, they're at this set-aside place with a barley which had been bound. The first question asked by the priest asked the bystander these questions. Has the sun gone down? It had to be answered in the affirmative. With this sickle, it had to be said yes. Into this basket, it had to be said yes. On this Sabbath shall I reap. And yet it had to be answered in the affirmative in all cases as they were carrying Jesus to the tomb. Having all questions answered yes, they cut down the sanctified barley. And the stalks were brought to the temple, thrashed with cane so as not to injure the grain, then parched on a pan perforated with holes so that each grain was touched by fire, and finally exposed to the wind. The grain was ground and then passed through 13 sieves, each closer than the other, and the flour until the flour was sufficiently fine so that the temple treasurer, or Gizbarim, could, when he plunged his hand into, it would not stick at all to any flesh. Then on that morrow after the Sabbath, after it had been done all its right preparation, which will take us forever if I go through all that, but it was the equivalent of 5.1 pints were offered. And as they were offering that in the temple, Christ was raised from the dead. So now, the new food could be eaten, which is his flesh. That's why he said, no man can come to me. He must eat. If any man come to me, he must eat my flesh and drink my blood. Now that's kind of an accident, isn't it? That this exact ceremony that all was typified in the law would happen exactly at the time that Christ was being taken down from the cross. But the point is, the whole human race has still been eating the old illegal corn. They've figured out great recipes for it. They've learned how to add all kinds of spices to it and make it sweet and add sugar to it. It's spiritual junk food. Because, oh, you can have, the Lord is telling me this day that we're going to have a, well, already telling him crap. He already told him. So when he raved, when Christ was raised from the dead, it was the ultimate event in time and space. It affected not just, it had nothing to do with Israel. Israel was just the type. Once he was resurrected, Israel was gone. Once he was resurrected, the human race was gone. Until you see the cosmic, the fullness of what this is, you'll continue to make God your sort of little local neighborhood God that's doing these little things around you. And you'll continue to do that until you die to yourself. And you can't die, you're already dead. Until you see that this being that has been identified as you, your entire life, has been masquerading as you. His real identity is the Antichrist, and his number is 666. And he set himself up in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Doesn't show anybody else, as I've said so often. Everybody else thinks he's a fool. Everybody else thinks he's Clyde. So nobody cares what we think about it. I don't care whether you believe me or not. But my exhortation to you is if you don't believe it and if you don't live it, then you better search the scriptures to find out whether these things be true. Don't live in la-la land. Awake from your sleep. That's enough for today. We'll get into more. There's a lot of stuff that happened in this time. Anybody have any response or questions? Everybody understand it?
I have a question. I don't know what your answer is going to be, and it's still not going to answer my question. Why does he have to have a number 666?
Well, that's not a have to. In all societies, the number for rest, ever since numbers were invented, was 7.
I knew you were going to say that.
And that means you can be at rest. Now, at rest isn't a state that you visit, and because that is not rest, according to the 7. And 7 isn't the goal. 8 is the goal. Resurrection is the goal. And so the best that man can do and the best that your mind can do is 666666666, because it can never be at rest and it goes infinitely. And every man has the mark of the beast in his forehead and on his right hand, because the mark on the forehead is just the It's throughout the scriptures. It shows it's how you think. And the mark in your hand, just as the right hand, is what you do. And so you cannot buy or sell unless you have that mark. It's not that you cannot. It's if you have the mark, you will buy and sell. If you don't have the mark, you won't. You won't try to make commerce of life because you're of a different order. Your only responsibility is dependence on God. He has the fullness of all responsibility. And so any thought about your... When you say, I mean, you've been taught to think about yourself and think about what you're going to say and think about what you're going to do next, and you spend your universe in thought. And it's just air. It's just goofy.
John said, maybe think how in the eternal now, the moment, that moment, there is no I motive. There's no recognition of past, future, whatever. It's a different place.
That's right.
And but I saw that the Antichrist tries to duplicate that moment. To, you know, he'll do anything to deceive, even duplicate the eternal now experience. But in that duplication, there's an I.
Well, but the duplication, the point of it is, that's why all of every religion, the Sufi Muslims, the Kabbalistic, or what am I trying to say, the ultra Jews, whatever, I can't remember their name.
Ascetics.
Huh? The Ascetic Jews, some of the Ascetic Jews, levels of yoga, they all try to reach this state of peace or rest, but they can only visit it. They can only visit what appears to be. That's why Jesus said, "My peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth." Because the world's peace is dependent either on some extraordinary disciplines, you know, where you try to tame the latent power of the soul. I try to release the latent power of the soul by taming the beast. And so you learn all kinds of mental gymnastics and tricks about so you can keep... we've done this before in the past. Remember I told you that if you try to close your eyes and concentrate on one thing, concentrate on a light bulb, or one word. Well, you can do it. You may do it for 2 or 3 seconds, but normally it's just a piece of a second. But you can train your mind by discipline to hold one thought for an hour. So you can have this imagined state by this releasing. See, all religions are trying to release the latent power of the soul, what man lost, what Adam lost at the fall. And that's, even if you could get that, it's still nothing because it's not eternal. Well, whatever way they're using, it's either enhancing or denying your mind. That's why abandonment, I mean, it's just ignore the son of a bitch. You're not going to become anything. But it's so boring to try. For people to try, oh, I'm just trying to get along. I'm just trying to make friends. I'm just trying to be. Why are you doing that? Why not just be? Well, if I be, then only might yell at me. Well, so what? What I say is nothing compared to what the judgment seat will be. You must live your life as if every second were the judgment seat. Anything from the Rutledges? Hi. How?
How?
I just read the, I didn't finish it even, but I was reading last night, the last issue of Arizona Highways, which I'm eternally grateful for getting a gift subscription from Bojo's for Christmas for 2 years now. But it's got an article about the eagle and it, how it was the symbolism of the eagle. It's this in the various, in Hopi or Apache or Navajo tribes. And it's the same kind of stuff. I mean, they, in terms of, except I'll say this, and then I'll shut up about it. In terms of where they were spiritually before 1492, is we have denigrated a long ways. We've gone backwards.
What happened in 1492?
Huh?
What happened in 1492?
Columbus sailed the ocean blue. No, I mean, we polluted it with our whole value system, with our Babylonian garment. I mean, I think they had a lot. They were a lot closer to the truth than this garbage that goes under the name of Christianity. Anyhow, I shouldn't have said that. Now I'm going to get.
That'd be a controversial statement.
Well, they were. California returns. Take a big guy.